Okay, Pirkei Avot. Where are we holding? We were up to... Okay, another famous Mishnah. A lot of famous Mishnahs in the first parak of Pirkei Avot. Shama Yomer, Mishnah, Parak Aleph, Mishnah Tezvav 15. Shamay Oimer. Finally we're up to Shamay, the foil of Hillel. Seito Yosra Keva, make your study of Torah set practice. Emor ma'at v'asayarbe, speak a little, don't talk so much, and do more, do a lot. Make sure to greet every single person with a pleasant countenance. Right? Pretty famous stuff in this Mishnah. Anyways, so the Bar Tanur starts off with Asei Toras Hakeva, make your study of Torah into a set thing. So he says like this, he says that, the Bar Tanur says one of two things. He says, first of all, he says that you have to make sure that your Torah study is the main thing in your life. Not only that, but if you want to work, he says, this is what he says, that you should learn as much as you can, but at a certain point your mind gets weary and you just can't learn anymore. He says, that's the time to then go ahead and do business. Until then, if you still have strength, keep going, keep learning. You know? That's, I guess, honestly, that would be, I guess, the natural sifting of the learners from the workers. You know, everyone's always like, should I be a learner, should I work? Should I learn, should I work? So the Bartner is saying, just learn. If you can't learn, then work. You know, so that would be actually an easy way to choose what to do in life. And that would basically make the people that really can learn, learn. And the people that can't, they'll work. The second shot that he says is referring to a postake. Asei Teras Lekeva means basically to be consistent. Right? A lot of times a postake, I mean, there are poskim that have done this, that they paskin, you know, they say that this is the halacha in something. And then they themselves keep it in a different level. So, okay, I'm sure there's such a rule, there's such a room for an allowance that a postake could say something, let's say, chal of akam, you know, goyish of milk, you're allowed to drink, but he himself wouldn't drink it. There was such a postkin that did that. But he's saying basically, in general, to keep consistent with what you do. Meaning, if you paskin, if you say that the halacha is to be lenient, you should also keep the leniency. And if you say that it's stringent, you should also, of course, keep the stringency, not to tell people, yeah, I don't think you're allowed to do that. And then, obviously, to do that would be a very bad thing. On a deeper level, the Svas Emes says that the purpose of Torah is to make it keva, is to make it that you acquire it, right? That you're acquiring that not just knowledge, but that you're internalizing Hashem's Torah into your heart. This, we've spoken about in many Mishnahs, many different ways, many different times, that the point of Torah learning is not necessarily just to know Torah, but to live Torah, to have it so deep in your heart that you react and with the Torah's value, with the Torah values, in an almost natural way because it's so absorbed into your heart as to what's the truth of the world. Chochmas Hamatzpun, he says that the word keva tells us to make Torah the primary focus of our life. Right? I mean, he says that like this: a person could learn Torah all day and all night, and yet one of my rabbeim always gives the example. You know, he comes home after a 10-day Kollel day, comes home, the kids are sleeping, you know, a long day, he kicks back and over supper and his coffee and his newspaper, you know. So he says that shows that not necessarily the Torah was the main purpose of his day. Obviously it still could be, you know, everyone needs to relax a little bit. But the point is that the Torah should be the main point of your life. Asei Toras Lekeva means that the Torah is the main thing of your life, the primary focus of your life. And he said, you know, you could have other guys. He always gives the example of the story of a kid that got married. I think I even said it over here once, and he ended up becoming a garbage man. So he said, "What? You're a garbage man?" He said, "Yeah." He wakes up at 4 a.m. and he goes, does all the shifts of garbage till like 7, 7:30, 8, something like that. You know, which is the garbage man's day. And then he goes to daven and spends the whole day in the kollel. He's saying, even a person that does something less than that, even a person that's learning, that's working almost the whole day, but his whole day is really based on Torah, and in it that, by lunchtime, he wants to grab a couple of minutes of Torah, and at nighttime, and if he meets some guy, he goes, "No, tell me a good vart," or he tells the guy a good vart. You see that the whole purpose of his life is Torah, so that's called Asei Toras Lekeva, making Torah the main purpose of your life. And you could have other people that so to speak, spend most of their day in Torah, but when you speak to them, you realize that it's not necessarily what their focus in life is. And so that would not be Mekayim, the Keva of this mission, according to Chacham Samatzman. Rav Nachman asked one of his followers, he said, "Ah, oh, Kivala.
Rufi. God,
you came just in time.
No, I was trying to get in my bags.
Ah, you're just coming again. You're just going through. So, okay, Kiva, don't worry, don't sweat it. So, Rav Nachman asked one of his disciples, he said, "Do you learn?" So the guy said, "Not really." "Why not?" "I don't have time. I'm running around, I have business and this and family. I don't have time." So Rav Nachman said to him, so he says, "If so, so you have to steal time." So he explained. He said that one of the first questions that they ask a person upstairs is, "Kavati eat in the Torah? Did you set time for a Torah?" So Rav Nachman says that there's a Torah, there's a pasuk in Mishle that says "V'kava es kaveim nefesh," that and basically refers to the lashon of the word of kava as stealing. So he says "Kavati eat in the Torah," and then in the next world that they're going to ask you is, "Did you steal time for Torah learning?" Meaning you're working, you're doing this, you're doing that. But and sometimes you really can't have that much time to learn. But even in that sense, you have to steal the time. You have to grab a few moments here, grab a few moments there, because by doing that, stealing, you make your Torah keva, not keva in the sense that you have, you know, every day that you learn 8 hours a day, but keva in the sense that you're stealing the time and that you have you connect to the Torah a lot throughout the day. There's another place in Sichas Aran that the Rebbe says that a person who takes upon himself to learn a set amount of Torah every single day, no matter what, he'll be saved from all bad, and he'll come to like tremendous amounts of good, right? And
so what I do is coming to the yeshiva is my set time,
right?
You know, I mean, I'm sitting here right now, and that's you know, my learning. I'm here for 2 hours or 4 hours, whatever. So I mean, I know that some people like would come here and then they'd go home and learn. So they have a different time frame. But is that okay to have the time frame for yourself? That's probably a silly question. Of course it's okay. when you come here, that's your time frame.
Versus, you mean when you learn at home?
No, I mean, I have X amount of hours.
Right.
That I can devote towards Torah study.
Right.
And if I say, well, I'm going to do that by coming here, because if I didn't come here, I would never.
Right.
You know, so.
For sure. That's your keva. That's your keva. Your keva is to come to yeshiva and whatever amount of learning that is you get. That's the definition of keva. The simplest definition is to make sure you have a set time. I mean, okay, a very rigid definition would be, you know, every day at 8:45 I'm there and I learn until 9:45. You know, I go to the daf shir from 9 to 10. Something like that. That's very nice. That's keva. But keva is also wherever you can grab. And I'm saying if you also set aside a time that when you're in this place you're learning, that's learning. As long as you do it, as long as you're here. And
it's kind of funny because when I was back in Baltimore, I was gone for a few weeks. I was back in Baltimore, and so my time changed. My learning time was 6:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. and then 5 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm. That so when you were there.
When I was there, because
right.
In between I worked, but
right.
You know, just my time changed.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever.
But I didn't mind using.
Hey, no video, Mister.
Where's Evie?
Huh?
Where is Evie?
Obi.
Evie Kenobi. Obi Wan Kenobi. Obi.
Sorry.
What? Huh. So, yeah, this is all part of the Aseh Toras LaKeva. So the Rebbe Rav Nachman says that if you set yourself a time of learning of learning something every single day and stick to it no matter what, he's talking about even if you don't necessarily have the time, let's say something like the daf yomi, right? So there, okay, if you have a shiur you go to every day, you have a set time. Obviously, that's the main way to get it done. But let's say you had a crazy day and you know the kids were sick and you were running around and then you had a wedding, you come home it's 12:30 at night. Rav Nachman would say, sit down and learn the daf. You know,
every
single day, no matter what, make sure that you do that set amount of time, because such connection to Torah in such a rigid way will continuously protect you and bring you to good. A lot of times you feel when you do such things like that, so you feel that sometimes that the learning is superficial, you know, like, here I am learning a daf every single day, I don't really understand it as well as I could if I just forget about the daf and I'll just learn four lines of Gemara, but I'll understand it very well. So you feel like it's superficial. So Leib Simcha, he says a line like this. He says, even if you can't put your head into the Torah, put the Torah into your head. He says, right? Even if you're not understanding things, just keep the Torah coming, flowing into your head, and eventually it'll have a tremendous effect on your body. He says it's on the words. I'd say to Rasta Keva,
how do you put it in your head?
Keep doing it. You read it, you look at it, you speak it out, and keep doing that. Even if your head is not in it, you're like kind of not focused and kind of spacing out or this or that, still keep the words of the Torah going, because eventually, and he's talking about, and we're talking about in the sense of, let's say, if you only hear something, eventually the words will open up.
And
it'll, yeah, there you go.
Just put it into my head.
There you go. Just what do they say? Download it into your head. But the Daf Yomi is a very powerful thing to do this. Yeah. The next line of the Mishnah. Emor ma'at v'aseh harbe. Don't talk so much.
There's a song like that.
Something like that. So, what is that? Who is the paradigm? The Bartimaeus says, Avraham Avinu is the paradigm of Emor ma'at v'aseh harbe. He saw these three guests on that hot day, and he said to them, come inside, I'll give you some bread. What are you going to do? He shechted the animals, he made mustard and tongue and everything, fresh breads and everything. He made a huge suda for them.
Well,
that's the way.
Milk and tongue. Butter and tongue.
That's the way. They were malachim. It was okay. That's the way we should act. Right? Instead of telling the guy, you know, I'm going to make you a huge suda, it's going to be amazing, and then you like give him a couple of pieces of bread. The opposite is the way.
What do you give your Shabbos guests?
A couple of pieces of challah.
Yeah? And you throw them extra bone in the challah, right?
Sometimes an extra bone in the challah. And if they're lucky, yeah. The Mishnah Lemaisa can be understood on a much deeper level, right? What is that? The Gemara in Sukkah says that if one is met, poga b'cha b'nuvel zeh, with the Yetzer Hara, drag him into the Beis Medrash, and there you're going to be saved from the Yetzer Hara, right? He wants to tell you to do something, this, that. Bring him into the Beis Medrash. You don't know what to do? Bring him into the Beis Medrash, sit down and learn a little bit, and it'll be alright. So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon asks, I don't understand. Yetzer Hara comes to a guy. He says, Les, here, go do this and this affair. You know? So the guy says, wow, that sounds great. That sounds so amazing. Come into the Beis Medrash. Why would the Yetzer Hara ever agree to such a thing? He would say, what are you, crazy? Go to the Beis Medrash? Stay here on Ben Yehuda. We'll do this. It'll be great. It'll be fun. No, come to the Beis Medrash. No, right? Hasha. Anyways, sit in the city, wherever you are. Look at the Avir is. The point is, why would the Yetzer Hara agree? So the Gra explains that there's actually a really behind-the-scenes dialogue going on. What's the dialogue? The Yetzer Hara comes to a person, and he overwhelms a person, right? He shows him some sort of advertisement, like we said in the past Urim, right? He says, whoa, look at that advertisement. You got to get this advertisement. It's going to make your life so happy. This thing is going to make your life great. You just go do it, right? So he doesn't know what to do. So he says he should tell the Yetzer Hara like this. This is what he tells him. He says, oh, am I going to do such an avera? Everyone's going to see. Eventually everyone's going to find out. It's disgusting, and I'm an honorable guy. I'm going to do such an avera. Right? He says, rather, you want me to do an avera. True. So you know what? Come, let's do a different avera. That's what the guy tells the Yetzer Hara. Let's go to the Beis Medrash. And let's learn Shaloi Lishma. Mamish, like to be a rabbi, to get money, all the worst things in the world, right? Let's do that. Why should we do this? This is a disgusting affair. I'm going to be with some woman in the street. Ugh, you know, like everyone's going to see me. It's disgusting. It's not right for me. Use all your chachma to say, let's go to the Beis Medrash, and I'm going to learn Mamish for money, for kavod and everything. Yitzhak is like, wow, that sounds good. Okay, let's go. Going to the Beis Medrash, you sit and you learn and you learn and you learn. The Gra says, eventually, Yitzhak is going to be like, well, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And he goes away. That's what the Gra says. The whole back and forth goes on in this Gemara. And the Ateras Avos extends this and explains it.
Now he knows your trick. He just said it out loud.
Ah, I hear that. But he gets very tempted by that, learning from those. Well, it's really.
You think they learn like that? How does it work with every year we do the same thing for Rosh Hashanah, like blowing the shofar to trick him?
Exactly.
You don't think he picks up on it already?
You know what? Like, a lot of the more boorish people in this world, they're not so smart. They're just very, you see, like, the really, really guys that are into the taivas and things in this world, they're not really that smart. They might be very persuasive, but they're not all that smart. So, yeah, I could see it happening. Like, what is that again?
Every year if he gets out of Hashem.
Yeah. But then again, Anyway, so he says that a person has a set amount of time that he has to learn and what he wants to accomplish. Let's say he wants to learn the Daf Yomi, right? And sometimes they'll just feel like, I can't do this. This is just too much. So he says, tell the Yetzer Hara like this, Emor Ma'at, come into the base medrash for me, and I'm only going to learn literally 3 lines of the daf. I can't finish the whole daf because it's too much. Right? I'm tired. It was a long day. I'm not going to learn the whole daf, but I'll learn a little bit. And he says, by doing that, Emor Ma'at, you tell the Yetzer Hara that you're only going to learn a little bit, Aseh Harbeh. He's going to allow you, he's going to open you up and allow you to learn much, much more than you would have imagined that you were able to do. This is actually one of the pieces. Sure.
Go ahead.
We'll listen to it later on the tape.
Yep.
Catch up.
I'll be
He says like this, Reb Nachman, when Reb Nosson came close to the Rebbe, so Reb Nosson was incredibly accomplished. He was very, very smart, and he had finished, I think, Kol HaTorah Kula, basically, he knew. And he was just still very, very struggling as to what he should, how he should serve Hashem. And he was searching, and he went to Rabbi Yitzchak Raditcher, he went all over. Even though he was married already, and his wife was giving him a lot of problems, that he was looking at the Hasidic Rebbes, he was searching around. Eventually, he came to the Rebbe, and Rav Nachman told him one little piece of advice that, he said, changed his life. He said, Abisla Zoichet Gush.
What's meant to say?
A little bit is also good. A little bit is also good. With those words, he must change my life. Right? Because he was a big lamdin, and the way he was brought up is to learn and do this and that. And he was always breaking and going ups and downs. And the Rebbe said, a little bit is also good. When he first came close to the Rebbe told him to learn Chai Prakim of Mishnayos every day.
Chai?
Chai. 18 Prakim of Mishnayos. Now, 18 Prakim of Mishnayos is a lot. But he didn't tell him to learn anything else. So he sat there, mamish, pounding Mishnayos. And eventually his wife was like, what is he doing, And he was so absorbed in his learning Mishnayos, okay, it's a lot of Mishnayos, but still, it's just Mishnayos, that he mamish was in the Beis Medrash all the time. But the point is that he's
a bucking Mishnayos.
The point is that he mamish took this, and even if he wasn't able to learn everything, even if he wasn't able to accomplish everything he wanted to, he was always trying to be happy with a little bit. And if and when a person is happy with a little bit, he comes for an hour, he comes for 10 minutes, he learns a couple lines of the Gemara, he gets happy that, I'm learning this a little bit. Then he gets the geschmack from the learning of that little bit. And then eventually he gets drawn and drawn more into the learning. Right? A lot of times, last week, right, when last time we were here, the guy said, he gave me this whole thing that some kid that he was involved with, like in his yeshiva, he said he's not learning well, maybe it's because he's not looking at people. He said in Mishnah Aleph that if you don't look at people in a good light, then maybe you don't learn well. I said there's a million
over here.
Yeah, when Yeshua was speaking about someone that in his yeshiva, so doesn't like learning, doesn't like this mesechti, doesn't like this. I said there's a million and one reasons why a person doesn't learn, but very often the person doesn't like it because he's not understanding anything.
You missed out big time.
Yeah. He's not understanding anything, and therefore he doesn't enjoy it. A person that understands is learning, so he gets a thrill out of learning, so he learns more. A person that is not understanding anything, and he's just learning and doesn't understand anything, he obviously won't have a very big chiyus to learn. So when Rav Nachman said a little bit is also good, he basically was giving chizuk to everyone that no matter how little you learn, to make that learning an enjoyable thing, that I'm learning, it's gewaldig, I'm happy. And then from there, that happiness and that geschmack will obviously bring more than what you set out to accomplish, and it can bring you to greater levels of learning. The Yachin, the first as well, says that interesting thing. This idea also applies to tzedakah, right? You got the Misha Beiras, not the Misha Beiras, the selling of the Aliyahs, right? And everyone's going, 100,000, 200,000, 500,000, 600,000. It was a big thing in the shuls, Who's going to do it? So that's in physical money. That we're going to get to actually in a second.
Regular Shabbos?
Right.
Or just...
No, no, that...
Yom Tovim.
Right. What?
Is that just a Yom Tovim or regular Shabbos?
Anytime. We're going to get to that. I forgot. That's actually the next shot. This shot, the Tversky Shul, speaks about in spiritual things. First, we'll speak about the spirituality. He says that when you want to make a Kabbalah, a pledge or something, that you want to do something, so he says, spiritually, he says, keep it very small. Because the bigger you make the pledge, that's it. I'm learning, you know, Chai Prakam of Mishnais. I'm learning 18 Prakam of Mishnais, and I'll finish the whole Mishnais in a month. The bigger you do that, make your pledge, the more the Yetzirah comes and says, I'm going to bash it down. Nachman speaks about this in the famous teaching of Menias, right? Anyone who's gone to Rosh Hashanah for Uman, and if you haven't gone there yet, then you learn about these things called Menias, right? Menias are obstacles. Rav Nachman says that when a person wants to do something, Dover Shev Kedusha, so especially like coming close to the Tzaddik, like going to Uman for Rosh Hashanah, so he gets a lot of obstacles. He gets a lot of things that come up in his way. And the point of the obstacles are mechuvan, they're directly specific from Hashem. For what? Not to push the guy away, but to make him increase his desire to go. Right? I went to go to Uman before I got married, and my father said he didn't want me to go, whatever, whole thing. So I asked my Rav Koenig, I asked him what I should do. So he said, listen, sometimes my kids ask me for something, and I tell them no. Not because I don't want to give it to them, because I want to see, do they really want it or not? If they don't really want it, they'll be like, oh, okay, Tati said no, you know. But if they really want it, they'll keep asking and badgering and coming up with different ways. So he said to do that. So I kept doing that, and I was davening like that. And then all of a sudden, my father said, yeah, you know what? You can go to Uman, and I'll come with you. And we had a beautiful trip before I got married to Uman.
But he didn't need to go?
No, he never went there. Yeah, and in those days, he was not ragil to go.
This is before Rosh Hashanah. This was just time you wanted to go
before the wedding. Before the wedding, you know, an extra trip.
Oh, it wasn't like your first time going.
No, I went already Rosh Hashanah. He was like, "What are you going again?" You know.
Oh, he went Rosh Hashanah too.
I went.
Oh, was his first time going?
It wasn't his first time, but it was one of the first. You know, he went in 1988, so it was the first time since 88. Anyways, so the point is that a lot of times
dinosaurs around, right?
What?
That's from the time of the dinosaurs. No? Dinosaurs
in 88, yeah. It's before you were born.
Yeah.
One time, they in Brussels, they always speak about the menias, right? You heard of this, Kiva? Menias. Meniot. The obstacles that come up in your menias, that you come up to go to Uman. They're always speaking about this. So, one time, I had the mamish, the most set-up trip into Uman ever. I was going with my dad. A couple of years later, he decided to come with me. And I was going with him, and had like a very wealthy cousin, so he was flying us all first class. So we're going from America,
first class,
why not? We'll go in style. So I was like, wow, that's amazing, we're all going
do
first class.
Do they give like fancier kosher meals on first class?
A little bit, sometimes. So anyways, we get to the airport, and my cousin is like very, you know, very modern, whatever. And so I'm all excited, you know, first class, it's going to be great, and it's going to be easy, you know. We get to the thing, and the guy's like, sorry, you're not on the flight. Like, what do you mean I'm on the flight? We had all the seats, we had everything. He's like, I see, but you're not on the computer, I'm really sorry. Because you were transferring miles, and the miles didn't transfer, you have to reestablish the thing, and you didn't reestablish the thing. They're like, what? They're arguing back and forth, and I was like getting all upset, everyone's getting all upset, we want to speak to managers. And I was like, there, and all of a sudden it struck me, I was like, whoa. You thought you were going to go to Uman, it was going to be the easiest trip ever, you know? How could it get any easier and better? All of a sudden, you have these menias. I remember that. So I stepped back, and I went like 5-10 feet behind the line where everyone was like arguing and starting to scream and go, oh, we're managers. And I just started saying, L'kufi tefilos, Hashem, please get me there. And I just started davening and davening, and sure enough, like 10 minutes passed by, and everyone's arguing and everything. I go back, sorry, you're not on the flight. There's still a lot of that. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I went back and I started to like, and I was like davening and davening. And then like nothing was working. So Rav Nachman says, if you have a dinam, you should dance a little bit. So I started a little rikud with someone and we were dancing a little bit. And all of a sudden the other guys start coming from the plane. They're like first class guys, you know, they never saw this before. They're like, what are you doing? Why are you dancing? I was like, you don't understand. Rav Nachman says there's menias, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, we're on the flight, first class. They're not letting us on. He's like, oh, I understood. You know, like he was like, that makes sense, okay. He was like, continue dancing, you know. Sure enough, after like literally 25 minutes, they were like, all right, fine, we'll let you on. Like, I don't know what was the whole thing, but it was amazing. And my cousin, the modern kid, he was getting all angry and everything. After 15, 20 minutes, he was like, turned around. He was like getting so angry and upset there. And he looked at me and I was like sitting there davening and dancing. And he walked back to me. He was like, what are you doing? So I was like, oh, Nachman says that whenever you go to Ulan, there's going to be minyan obstacles to increase your desire. So that's all that this is going on. He was like, he says that? I was like, yeah. Was like, wow. This is amazing. He was like so disfuzzed. Like, it's actually happening to him. He's getting the minyan, you know?
You think if I go, I'm going to have problems.
You might, but the point of the problem is, listen, some years, Baruch Hashem, very smooth, and you know, the problem is the guy cuts you off in the front of the line, you're like, going to punch him in the face, you know? Whatever it is, but the point is that the minyan should be easy and shouldn't be anything, and the point of the minyan is to increase the desire. So if and when you increase your desire anyways, and you have tremendous desire, then you can break through anything and get there.
There's always something
happening. The Divrei Yoel brings down.
Cuts the line, then you have the easy time getting
there. Yeah. Divrei Yoel brings down like what we were saying before. He says that there's a medrash that quotes this same line: "Emor ma'at vaseh harbei, do say a little, do a lot," as it's referring only to tzaddikim. So he says, what does it mean? It should refer to everyone. So he says that it has to do with tzedakah, right? You got those pledges, right? To come to make a pledge, whether it's on Shabbos, Yom Tov, anything. And a guy says, yeah, $2,000 you're going to pledge. You know, great, wow.
$10,000.
So he says that for a regular guy, it's good for him to say very high numbers. Why? Because if he pledges $2,000, it could be in the end of the day he'll give $200. You know? He's not going to cut out $2,000. He'll give $200. It'll be a nice donation, right? So for him, he should say a lot. That's why this Emor Ma'at in this context doesn't apply to regular people. Tzaddikim, they could be the guy that says, I'll give $20. And then in the end, when it comes to push and shove and they actually collect, it gives $200 or $300, you know? The tzaddikim will always say a little and they'll do a lot more. But the regular people, it doesn't apply to them because a lot of times when they say a little, they'll give even less. Say $2, they'll give a quarter, you know? And based on Nachman's teaching, to end off for this week, next week we'll get the last part of the Mishnah. Nachman has a teaching of Zamra, which we've spoken about many times. Right? He says you have to find the small points of good within another person and focus on it and on yourself also, and doing this lifts you or the person himself to a state of joy, and that could lift his spirit to sing to Hashem and to bring him closer to Tshuva. Right? And he finds this whole thing is based on the pasuk as Zamra Lelekai Be'oidi. We say it in Psukei Mezimra. Right? As Zamra Lelekai Be'oidi means to my God that is still with me, Be'oidi, I sing. But the Rebbe says it means, Be'oidi can mean Be'oid Shali, with my Oid. What is my Oid? Be'oidi, my Oid. So he says another pasuk in Tehillim says, Oid Me'at Ve'ein Rasha. And in a bit, in a little bit time, which literally means in times of Mashiach, there's not going to be any more Rasha. But the Rebbe says, doesn't that, he you know, gives the Hasidic interpretation, Oid Me'at, Oid Me'at Ve'ein Rasha. He says, the Oid Me'at, the little bit, within a person that's Ein Rasha, that doesn't have a Rasha, right? There's a little spark within each Jew that is the Pintul Yid, that Mamash has nothing bad in him. And that spark does mitzvahs and does things that are pure and perfect and amazing. He says that we have to find those sparks of pieces. That's what we say, Azamra Lelekai Ba'oidi. That when I sing out with my Oid, what is my Oid? So you connect it to the other person, give Oid Ma'at Ein Rasha. That in a little bit, the little part of my soul that it's good, I sing to Hashem. So, if that's the case, you can connect it to our Mishnah. It says, Emor Ma'at Ve'aseh Harbeh. He says, Emor Ma'at could then mean, say a little bit, meaning find this Ma'at, this little piece of it inside of you that is pure good, and speak it out. Speak it out, like we said before, that even in Nekudah Tova, if you find something good, so you just have it, you feel good, wow. No, speak it out. I gave tzedakah today, even though I have a lot of reasons why I gave tzedakah, there's a little point inside of me that gave tzedakah just because the mitzvah and I want to give to people. Right? And that will give you a little jolt of chiyas, of simcha, and that could bring you to the aseh harbeh, to be able to do many good things. And when you're filled with simcha doing all these things, you can come to the next part of the Mishnah, which is next week. And Makabas called the Masifa Panam Yadvais, you could basically greet every person with a countenance that's very pleasant. And if she's on the Hajj, she means Akenum, she was Zaycha to all these things. Greeting of Mashiach, Mehevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevevev